Hello and welcome to the programme which looks at the Holy Land. I am Paul Calvert.
Psalm 107 verse 1 from the New King James Bible says this: Oh, give thanks to the Lord, for he is good, for his mercy endures forever.
I'm with Chris Mitchell from CBN News. Now, Chris, has it been a very busy time for you reporting on the war?
Very busy since October 7th, Paul. I think anybody in the news media here in Israel or the Middle East has found that really exponentially it's been much busier, I think much more climactic and much more serious and historic, actually, since October 7th.
Lots of twists and turns to different stories, is there?
Very much so. I think what happened on October 7th down in the southern communities in the kibbutzim, the moshavim, really changed, I think, Israel's history. And so many different various factors, like you said, you have what happened to the hostages, you have the hostage families, you have the what's going on in the war itself inside Gaza, and you have the overall diplomatic reverberations, you know, calling for a Palestinian state, what's happened recently with college campuses, so many things that have really been spawned since October 7th.
Is this your first time reporting on a war in Israel?
No, I mean, we began here in 2000. If you call the Second Intifada a war, that began in September of 2000. 2006, there was a second Lebanon war. And then 2008-9, there was the first, I would say, Hamas-Israel war that happened again in 2012, 14, 2021. So this is probably the biggest war that we've reported on, but certainly not the only one.
I was going to say, is this war different than any of the other wars?
Definitely. I think this war is on a different magnitude, a bit similar to 2006 when there was a 34-day war between Hezbollah and Israel. But this war sort of, excuse the pun, exploded here in the Middle East, and I think was the first time in my memory that Israel has gone into Gaza in such a massive way because of October 7th. The feeling here in Israel that they cannot live with a terrorist organization committed to their genocide, which acted out on October 7th, and something that they have stated quite clearly they will do again and again if they have the opportunity. But you also have what's happened up in Hezbollah on the northern border, and you have the Houthis in Yemen, Iranian-backed militias in Iraq and Syria, and then overarching all of this is a potential nuclear Iran, which is many ways pulling the strings between all these other proxy Iranian groups from Hezbollah, the Houthis, to Hamas.
Now, you actually went into Gaza. What was it like going into Gaza?
Well, I went in with Joel Rosenberg, as well as 16 other journalists. We went into Khan Yunis. We went with the IDF and to three, actually, APCs, took us all there. We went into a place to go see a tunnel that had been constructed by Hamas. It took about an hour and 15 minutes to actually get there. And if you've ever been in an APC, it's not designed for comfort or for speed. So it's kind of slow and very bumpy. But when we got there, we were taken into a tour of one of these tunnels. The General Goldfuss, who was our IDF briefer, explained that these tunnels are ubiquitous. They're all over. They're in schools, homes, mosques, even supermarkets. And they're just part of the infrastructure of Gaza that had been built over 17 years since they took over in 2007, bigger than the London Underground. And so going in there was actually a one-of-a-kind and first-hand experience to actually see what one of these tunnels looks like. It was very long. It was about a half a mile long. It was also like a spider web where you had different tunnels running off in different directions. This particular tunnel, they knew, had held 12 hostages at one time. And because three of those 12 hostages had been released, so they had actually constructed a room. Well, there was a room there already built, but they had constructed a cage to hold in these 12 hostages. As we went down, we saw various rooms, kitchens, sleeping areas, bathrooms. So it was pretty sophisticated in its operation, and it was just quite an experience to taste what these hostages have gone through, some of them over 200 days now. And actually, one time during our briefing, the General Goldfuss asked if we could all turn our lights off and to get an experience of what it was like to be a hostage in total darkness.
Wow. What are these tunnels actually made of, and do they have electricity down there?
They have electricity. Some of them have ventilation. They are mainly concrete in the tunnel itself, but off, as I said, to different areas, there's sleeping quarters, there's tiled rooms, there's running water to some of them. So they're pretty sophisticated. This particular tunnel went about 75 feet underground, and that you could live down there if you had to, and I'm sure many of the Hamas leaders have been doing that for a long time.
Was that all the things that you got to see while you were in Gaza?
That's the main thing. We did get to see a little bit of the damage from the air attacks of the buildings that we were in or nearby. We could hear some of the gunfire going on and some of the drones, which I guess happen all the time. But we could see through the APC as we were going down some of the destruction that had been wrought in Gaza. And I would describe that as something that Israel really didn't want to do anything before October 7th. They knew that, I don't think they knew the extent of the tunnel system. They knew it was large, but I think they were surprised how big it was. But also what was discovered as the IDF went in is almost every home had some sort of weapons cache, whether it was RPGs, grenades, rifles, armament. So that's why they have been going house to house and neighborhood to neighborhood to eliminate this threat to Israel.
You went in with the IDF, but I imagine it was still dangerous going in.
To some degree it was, but I thought if the IDF is taking 16 journalists, including myself, Joel Rosenberg, I think there were people from CNN and Wall Street Journal, I think, there is a danger associated with that, but I felt if they're taking us in, they probably expect to take us out too.
Did you question going in, or is this something you wanted to do?
Oh, no, this is something that we've wanted to do, actually something we asked to do for many months, and we finally did get the opportunity to go in to see firsthand ourselves what had been going on inside Gaza.
Have you been into Gaza before?
Well, I was in there before the disengagement, which was in 2005, and we were there several times. And if for people to know the history, is that in 2005, there were 21 Jewish communities inside the Gaza Strip, about 9,000 Jews. They had prosperous communities, businesses. They had hothouses where they grew vegetables, flowers that had been exported to Europe. They hired and employed thousands of Palestinians. And it was quite a... for some people, quite an idyllic, you know, lifestyle. Many had been there for a generation. When they came, even, you know, 20, 30 years before, many of that local Palestinians said the land was cursed and why are they coming? But they really did make the desert bloom. And it was really grievous to a lot of people when then Prime Minister Ariel Sharon forced them to leave. It was a very tumultuous time, a very heart-wrenching period for many Israelis who lived there, and a very divisive time in Israel's history where many people believing that if we finally get out of Gaza, there'll be peace. But contrary to that, 2005, they pulled out in August. The Palestinian Authority was given authority over there. They were overthrown by a coup in 2007 by Hamas, and Hamas has been in control of the Gaza Strip ever since then. And established what some have said is the largest terror base in the world.
So you've been in there, you've seen Gaza. Mm-hmm. From your perspective, is Israel committing a genocide?
No, I don't think they are. First of all, I think the numbers that are released by the Ministry of Health, which is overseen by Hamas, those numbers are inflated, I believe. I don't know if we know the exact number, but they're unverified, and more information has been coming out lately that they don't even have names for some of these people that supposedly have died. Israel does what it can to reduce civilian casualties, and the way they do that is by texting Palestinians, calling them, sending leaflets, giving out maps to show them where they can go to find safe haven out of harm's way. And I've heard from military historians and others, leaders, military historians or military men who think this is unprecedented that Israel would take such extent and such pains to put these non-combatants out of harm's way. So it's anything but a genocide. The damages to many buildings is real, and some, unfortunately and tragically, Palestinians are caught in harm's way, but it's Israel's commitment to get them out of harm's way. It's also, on the other hand, Hamas's desire to make sure that they are human shields. From a Hamas point of view, they can use the death toll or images of people who have tragically died as propaganda to demonize Israel. And unfortunately, this tactic works. They've done it in 2008, 9, 12, 14, and 21. So when this happened in October 7th, for some of us, it was like we've seen this movie before. We knew exactly the strategy of Hamas, and so you know exactly what they're doing and why they're doing it. And it has had an impact in the media, and the media affects politicians. Politicians affect the public, you know. The media goes to the media, the public, and the politicians. So it really has had an impact of what you see around the world in rallies on college campuses. But unfortunately, I think it's a misconception that Israel's committing genocide or that Israel's an apartheid state. If you come here, you'll see it simply isn't.
Now, America doesn't want Israel to go into Rafah. Does Israel need to deal with Hamas in Rafah?
Yeah, I believe they do. I think in that they're actually there now, despite the U.S. pressure not to go in. This is the last major stronghold of Hamas right there on the Egyptian border. And unless Israel is allowed to defeat Hamas in this last major stronghold, Hamas would survive. And I think they would try to reconstitute themselves and again become a threat to Israel once again. So I think it's, from Israel's point of view, it's very important that they finally defeat Hamas, capture their leaders, Yahya Sinwar and Mohammed Deif being the main two ones, and also to eliminate what's happening on the Egyptian border, where so much of the ammunition and arms and weapons are being smuggled in through Egypt to help resupply Hamas.
You've already mentioned campus protests, and we've had marches on the street in London. Do you feel like you're fighting a media war as well here in Israel?
Oh, I think it's much a media war. It's a physical war being fought by men and women on both sides in Gaza, but also the media war is probably as important, if not more important, because it seems like the disinformation or misinformation sometimes feeds the public a wrong perception of what's going on. One example happened right just a few days after the war began. There was an errant misfire by an Islamic Jihad rocket that hit a parking lot. And what we found out later by the Islamic Jihad spokesperson, they blamed Israel. And they said it hit the hospital and it killed hundreds of people, maybe as many as 500 people. The media ran with that story. And before the truth came out, 24 hours later, that it wasn't something that Israel did. It was something the Islamic Jihad did, killed dozens of people tragically, but it was their fault and it wasn't Israel's fault. But by then, the news had gone out on BBC and CNN, much of the world's media. So that information war is very critical, because some of the information that gets out there demonizes Israel. And I think people get a misperception of what actually is happening. What Israel is doing, as I mentioned before, trying to protect Palestinians, as opposed to Hamas that has a strategy of putting them in harm's way, all because of these propaganda war / media war that they're waging against Israel.
Iran attacked Israel just recently with rockets. You've written a book about Iran. Tell us what your book is about.
Yeah, the book is called ISIS, Iran, and Israel, What You Need to Know About the Current Middle East Conflict and the Coming Middle East War. I guess maybe that war has come to pass now. Iran is the head of the octopus, or head of the snake. As many people say, they are controlling Hamas and Hezbollah. They fund them and arm them. These Iranian-backed militias in Iraq and Syria, the Houthis in Yemen, they wouldn't exist in their current state unless Iran was behind them. And this is all part of their overall strategy. They call it a ring of fire around Israel. You go from Hezbollah to the north, these Iranian-backed militias in Syria and Iraq, the Houthis down in Yemen, Hamas on Israel's southern border, all designed to destroy the state of Israel. and that's their goal. They say it out quite openly. They say it quite often. And when they had 350 projectiles, ballistic missiles, cruise missiles, suicide drones, all aimed at Israel, it was designed to strike a blow against the state of Israel. First time they had attacked Israel directly. And for those that lived here through it, including yourself, at April 13th, that night, it felt like it was going to be a devastating attack. And yet 99% of those projectiles were shot out of the air by the Iron Dome, by, you know, F-16s, in a very variety of ways, but Israel was spared. But that's the main battle right now, is between Iran, which is actually on the verge of getting a nuclear weapon, which would change the Middle East dramatically.
Did you stay up till nearly 2 o'clock in the morning to see that?
Well, actually, I was up. I was up until about 11 or 11:30, and I was actually planning a video shoot the next day in the Galilee. And when I got off the phone with my cameraman editor, he called me back and he said, "Do you know what's happening?" And I said, "No." And well, that's when I found out that all these missiles were literally on their way, hours away. And so I drove from the Galilee to Jerusalem and came to our bureau, and we did a live stream that night. So I heard some of the explosions overhead here in Jerusalem. But it was interesting. Somebody put out a little cartoon that night, April 13th, that looked like the apocalypse. And in the morning, after everything had been shot down nearly totally, it was like, do I go to work on Sunday? So it was quite a contrast.
What is your prayer for Israel and for the Palestinians?
Well, for the Palestinians, I think prayer would be to get under from the tyranny of Hamas. It's not heard quite as much, but there are Palestinians within Gaza who consider Hamas to be a tyrant, a dictator. There's very little freedom inside Gaza. So for the Palestinians to be free from this kind of ideology, they are dedicated to destroy Israel. This is a religious war for them. They want to kill the Jews, destroy Israel. And I think the prayer would be for the Arab Palestinian people to be free from Hamas and this kind of ideology. For Israel, I would say for wisdom, for strength. I think in the midst of all the pressure that they have, both internally and especially from the quote-unquote international communities, nations that are demonizing them, that are breaking off relations with them, the International Court of Justice that is condemning them or commanding them to cease operations that Israel believes is necessary for their own security. So I would say, and for the Lord to come in power and bring revelation to the people here that who is the ultimate purveyor of peace, the Prince of Peace, Jesus.
You present Jerusalem Dateline. How can people watch that, and how can people get a hold of your book?
Well, it's on YouTube. It's under CBN. You can find Jerusalem Dateline or go to JerusalemDateline.com. It's online. It's on YouTube. It's on various networks as well. But I think YouTube would be the easiest place for people to find it. And the book you can find on Amazon, ISIS, Iran, and Israel, and also a few other books, one called Dateline Jerusalem.
Okay, Chris, thank you very much.
Great to be with you, Paul.
Thank you for joining us today. Pray that God will move by his mighty power in the Holy Land and bring his peace.